are places I remember all my life. Though some have changed, some forever, not for better. Some have gone and some remain. All these places have their moments. With lovers and friends, I still can recall. Some are living. In my life, I've loved them all. But of all these friends and lovers, there is no one compares with you. And these memories.
Hello again, and welcome to I've Got a Beatles Podcast with Dave and Chris. And that is the wonderful, wonderful song In My Life by John Lennon and Paul McCartney from Rubber Soul, which, if I remember correctly, in one of our previous episodes, Chris, you mentioned that that was one of your top two, if not most favorite song of the Beatles.
Yeah, fantastic song.
Yeah, it is. And
it's like the Michael Jordan of Beatles song, really.
And it just fits so well in the on the album Rubber Soul, which is our subject for today, because it's time for yet another anniversary here. It's been 50 years since Rubber Soul came out, and I think we're talking about it at a good time, because actually 50 years ago, at the time we're recording it, they were actually recording it. And also, one of our previous episodes, you made a really good point that I think we can discuss as we go through it, about their tour that they did, the North American tour, at the end of August when they finished up Hollywood Bowl. It was like, you know, there's some new things to think about here, and we've been exposed to a lot of new sounds, a lot of new people, a lot of experiences, and we're going to put them on our next album. And I think that's something that we're going to keep coming back to in this album, is the experimentation and just a new sound.
Well, and the other thing is, this is coming off of a break.
Mm-hmm, right.
Hadn't had maybe in how many years before that? Years and years and years of just touring and doing this and doing that. So to have some time, sit around, reflect about life, and then come and try to write some songs obviously they had gotten into some experimentation with some drugs, particularly marijuana. A lot of the Beatles call this their weed record.
Yes.
although it seems like they didn't smoke very much when they were recording.
Right.
But but certainly you can tell there's a difference in this album and the previous ones.
Yeah, definitely. And it's generally considered, I think most people would say, their first really serious album, or at least the one that has almost universal acclaim by critics, and the one that really gets the middle period going. So starting with Rubber Soul, into Revolver, into Sgt. Pepper. It seems like a very good starting point to take that early stuff and, as we've just mentioned, bring in some other influences and just treat the album as a very different experience. There's not lots of hits on this album, though there's a lot of famous songs. It's not just purely for hits and for tunes, but the album has a certain sound and coherence to it.
Rubber Soul was voted number 5 all time on Rolling Stone magazine's list of the 500 greatest albums of all time in 2012. What do you think about that, Dave?
Well, that's pretty high praise. It's really a very high ranking. I don't think it was the highest Beatles album in their survey, but I think it's obviously 5 is a pretty high number, and I'm guessing that they're basing that opinion on a lot of what we just talked about, the fact that it's a new serious album, better, more sophisticated songwriting, and just a look at the Beatles in a different way as artists instead of just pop hit craftsmen here.
Yeah.
So I think that may be part of the reason for it. Plus, it has a lot of neat things about it too. The cover, we'll talk about the cover and just that photo and the different versions that came out, the American versus the rest of the world versions, and it just has a lot of interesting things about it, even though it was recorded in a real crunch for time, because as you mentioned, they were on break, but then they came back in October of 1965 and only had really about 4 weeks to get this going, because Brian Epstein and everybody said, it's time for a Christmas album. We need to get this out for Christmas. And so it actually was released on in the UK on December 3rd, 1965, and then in the US on December 6th. So it really was ready for Christmas time sales.
Yeah, considering the, you know, how many very good songs there are on it, it's quite an achievement that they turn that around so quickly, and there are very few outtakes from this album. We'll play one at the end of the episode, but very, very few outtakes of the, from this album, because they only did like one or two takes of things.
Yeah. Yeah,
and it doesn't really suffer. Maybe we'll talk about one instance where I believe it suffers from that. Obviously, number five all time on a list is pretty good. I don't know if I personally would have it there, based on its songs on it. Yeah, I think it is ranked a little bit high in some people's minds. Some people, it's their favorite Beatles album. I'm not going to argue what someone else's favorite Beatles album is. But I think it's like sort of like the Bulls won 6 championships, right? What was their 5th best championship? It's still
Who knows?
It's still a championship. It's still like
who cares? Right.
They still holding the trophy.
Yeah.
That's how I feel a little bit about Rubber Soul. To me, it might be the 4th best Beatles album, but it's fantastic.
And it's always hard to rank these things. It's very subjective, and
yeah,
it depends on whoever's, you know, the opinion of whoever they're talking to or asking. So, but I think certainly we would say it's one of the top Beatles albums for sure.
Yeah.
And that was also borne out by the popularity. It was a huge hit. Number one hits. It was 12 weeks at number one in the UK. And in the US, it was number one for 6 weeks. So it was pretty popular and has sold, you know, millions and millions of copies, obviously. So
yeah,
there's a lot to be said, and I think we're gonna take a little bit of a different approach to the, you know, to our analysis of the album here, instead of just going track by track, because I'm sure all of you listening have a copy of Rubber Soul and know how it goes. We thought it'd be more interesting maybe to look at the contributions of each Beatle as contributing to the whole. Because that's something in the past, you know, like Hard Day's Night was a big John album. He was just cranking them out, getting a lot of songs on there, and not necessarily a lot of group interaction. But here we've got a pretty balanced amount of songs between John and Paul for the most part. And then George has a couple of interesting songs, and Ringo is on one as well. So
some of their musical contributions, like, picked up a little bit. Obviously, George with the Indian influence coming into this album. I would argue that this is the first time that McCartney's bass playing just takes a big leap.
Oh yeah,
on this album, it's just much better, and would you know, excellent from here on out. Probably no bigger jump in quality of any person than John's lyric writing. Because John had written a couple of books, and the books were very sort of personal books. And in one of the interviews, somebody was interviewing him about his books, and he's like, why do your songs not reflect your life as much as your books do? And I think he thought about that, and then I think he went to write some lyrics, and then here were the results.
Yeah, definitely a big leap forward. And I would also say for Paul, too, in some of the songs particularly, there's a personal introspection to both of their lyrics that it's less generic, let me say, than some of the earlier songs. And I think that makes it more interesting. We're talking about affairs. We're talking about being estranged from your girlfriend, or kind of having a fight, or having, you know, all these different sorts of things happening that it's more of a personal thing instead of saying she loves you or I want to hold your hand or stuff like that.
There's a song on here, Nowhere Man, that's not about love.
Yeah, exactly. That's
too. Like, whoa,
right.
Whoa, songs that we could write songs not about, you know, girls.
And, yeah.
this girl's please come back to me kind of things.
Yeah, that's a big deal too. So yeah, lots of that may, again, that it's the innovative quality of this album that probably makes it rank so highly, because doing things that we haven't had done before, but especially by the most famous group in the world at this time. So yeah, if you're ready to dig in, and we'll start our order. We'll start with John, since you mentioned John and his lyric writing and some of his most famous songs are on this album as a Beatle. And we'll want to dig right in here, and we can start with Norwegian Wood. And then, of course, this is a Chris favorite here because of the full title of Norwegian Wood is...
Norwegian Wood, and in parentheses, This Bird Has Flown.
Norwegian Wood, one of John's really great contributions to Rubber Soul. And what are some things that really stand out about this track to you, musically and or lyrically, that represent John taking big steps forward?
Well, it's a song with a more sophisticated bohemian kind of lifestyle than anything previous. So, you know, obviously it's about an affair, which, you know, I don't know if at the time he probably admitted, but later on would definitely admit that he was trying to hide. He was trying to write a song about an affair he was having, but also kind of hide it. Very sophisticated lyric. The sitar.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Probably the first person hearing this, putting it on his turntable and hearing this, and they hear Drive My Car, and they're like, that's what I expect from the Beatles. And then that sitar coming in probably hit him like a bolt of lightning, I would imagine.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's no drums on this, right?
Yeah, right. It's just... from what I can see, tambourine is the only thing that Ringo is playing. So it's really acoustic. So you've got there's no electric guitars either. It's just the bass, which I might add, you mentioned earlier about Paul's bass playing really taking a leap forward too. He had a new bass, which we alluded to a little bit in our Paul's Basses episode.
He was playing the Rickenbacker full time.
On this album, the only song he doesn't play it on is Drive My Car, but the rest are all played on the Rickenbacker. And so that's a different sound, and it's kind of a counter melody to what's going on in the vocal part. So last night I was playing through the whole album on my acoustic guitar, and this is just such a fun song to play because it's capoed on the second fret, and it's the D around a D chord with a capo, and just like a classic kind of acoustic guitar framework here. And that sitar adds an extra element that we had not heard before. It was probably one of the first times, if not the first time, that you heard an Indian influence on a pop song, and especially the sitar. So I guess George had some trouble getting it to work at first, had to re-record it a few times.
Wasn't exactly a pro at playing like right off the bat.
No.
But anyway, I wanted to read from, I recently got the paperback version of a book called The Beatles Lyrics, edited by Hunter Davies. A very good book, and it has pictures a lot of pictures of the lyrics. Hunter was hanging out with the Beatles at the time of all these songs. So he has some firsthand things to say. But he says something very interesting here about Norwegian Wood. He says, it's probably the first of their songs where the lyrics are as important, if not more important, than the tune.
Mm.
There is no chorus for a start, no repeat of any of the lines or verses, so you're meant to concentrate on the story being told.
Hmm. So more of a ballad, kind of just a tale. Yeah.
Yeah. So they're obviously working into a new territory here.
Yeah.
I guess that's going to be the theme of a lot of these.
Yeah, absolutely. And this gets things going. Well, it's the first time we heard the sitar. It's definitely not going to be the last time in the Beatles' career that we hear that Indian influence. So great first track from John on the album. And that's followed up by a big hit that everybody knows. And like you said earlier, it's the one song not about love. So we can listen to a bit of Nowhere Man.
He's a real nowhere man, sitting in his nowhere land, making all his nowhere plans for nobody. Doesn't have a point of view, knows not where he's going to, isn't he?
So Nowhere Man, Dave, what are your thoughts on that?
I listen to the music part first usually, and so I'm struck by the a cappella opening with just the harmonies. There's no instruments at the beginning, and it's in the beautiful Beatles three-part harmony. And that, of course, the famous la ooh la la las and going throughout the chorus. So harmonies are important here. The bass line is really prominent, and I didn't really notice it until, I don't know, several years ago. I was on a boat in Branson, Missouri with friend of the show, Doug. And
oh, boy.
Yeah. And we
I
were,
wish I could take a time machine and be there with you.
I know. And we were cranking Beatles albums on the boat on Table Rock Lake. And his sound system was installed in the boat. And it was really Doug's a bass player. So the bass just was cranked. And we both stopped and said, whoa, let's listen to that bass line again. So I definitely encourage you to listen to that if you haven't cranked up the bass. But the bass is a big deal. The Fender Strats that John and George are playing have a really neat sound, very different kind of sound. So I just love the music very much to this. And the lyrics are good too, obviously. They're very personal and very John-like, that he's sitting around, couldn't write a song, and sort of in a rut, and then decides to write about that. So that's a pretty great inspiration.
Yeah, I really have always connected to this song. I think there are many times in our lives when we kind of feel like lost.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't know what to do. Maybe even just day to day. You know, I don't know what I'm doing today. I can't get it going. And I really like the story of the writing of this. They struggled trying to write something good for days and days and days. And then, as often is the case, when you stop trying to make so much effort and you just kind of ease off, take a little nap, then it just comes to you.
Yep.
And that's exactly the story of how he wrote the song. So I like it. And of course, it's used wonderfully in Yellow Submarine.
Oh, yes. That's right. Yeah.
It just is the highlight of Yellow Submarine, if you ask me.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, it's about Jeremy Boob, correct? About that he's a nowhere man. Can't figure out who he is. And yeah, just sort of a forgotten little person. So, yeah, it's used very well. So.
Yeah.
So I think we're 2-for-2 on John here. And then that's followed up. His next song on the album It's not an entirely 100% John song, though he does most of the singing. It's The Word. So, Chris, are you a big fan of The Word?
I'm not a big fan of The Word, actually.
Oh. Well, I'm not a big fan of The Word.
Now, The Word is love.
Yeah, oh, okay.
I think The Word's interesting in that it's one of their first sort of psychedelic kind of songs. The lyrics handwritten on in this book, The Beatles Lyrics, handwritten and illustrated by Paul, though it was mainly John's kind of lyric, are all colored in and colorful and crazy looking. I think it's a good first attempt at what would later be sort of perfected in songs like All You Need Is Love, but it's not one of my favorites. I do like the format, that it's like they're singing together and then John breaks out with the sort of screaming lyric.
Screaming John.
Yeah, screaming John lyrics. Very, very emotional lyrics. But I don't, it's usually a skipper for me. It really is.
Interesting.
So I'm not a big fan of it.
Well, I'm going to take the opposite approach here and say it's one of my favorite tunes on the album, actually.
Really?
Yeah. Oh. I love the feel of it. I love the keyboards being really front and center here. You've got Paul on piano and George Martin playing that harmonium at the end that you really hear standing out. It has a great groove, kind of a bluesy groove that you don't hear the Beatles get a lot, to me. And that the guitar part, boom, junk, junk, that particular chord, I think, is the same chord as in Taxman, so it's a bit of the same, a little bit dissonant, kind of grindy sort of chord, and I like the feel of The Word, and I also like its vagueness, too, a little bit, instead of, you know, this is about love, or whatever, it could be about anything. He said, you know, what it is The Word, well,
yeah,
I guess it's love, but what does that mean? Yeah. I'm a big fan of The Word.
Okay. Well, good. Yeah. Good for you. Good for you. I it's not bad. I mean, I do like elements of it. I'm just, it's usually kind of a skipper.
Yeah. I get that. And yeah. Maybe it's because there are a couple great spots in there where Ringo's drum fills sound like it's just going to completely fall apart any second. It's like this one is really wild fills. This is really fun, but, I like The Word and, the collaboration involved there.
Now, the next one here is a real treat. And the more and more and more and more I listen to this album, the more this song just stands out as terrific gem, probably still underrated, probably always will be underrated, and that is Girl.
Is there anybody going to listen to my story? All about the girl who came to stay. She's the kind of girl you want so much it makes you sorry. Still you don't regret a single day. Ah, girl. Girl, girl. When I think of all the times I've tried so hard to leave her, she will turn to me and start to cry. And she promises the earth to me and I believe her. After all this time, I don't know why. Ah,
She's the kind of girl to put you down. So, Girl from John here is I think we both like this one a lot. I am struck by John's singing is really excellent on here. I like the song, the chord progressions, and the just the musical structure of the song is very sophisticated, very almost mixture sort of classical in some ways and jazz or more kind of Tin Pan Alley type of music involved here. And of course the great background vocals with the tit 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 tits going is a lot of fun as well. Another acoustic track, so no electric guitars on this one, and has a bit of a softness to it that I like. And I know you're a big fan of it as well. So are you like the lyrics particularly, or how it all works together?
I just like everything about it. It's a very kind of sexy song, you know?
Yeah.
It's more about sort of a passion for somebody rather than just like a love. You know, it's a much more sophisticated woman that he's talking about, a much more sophisticated relationship than, say, like 8 days a week. What do you know about the girl in 8 days a week? Nothing.
No.
You know? No. But this this has a very subtle kind of religious overtones in it, particularly in the lyric. Was she told when she was young that pain would lead to pleasure? Did she understand it when they said a man must break his back during his day of leisure? Will she still believe it when he's dead? You know, it's just very sophisticated and really about how people, you know, how people interact. And John said that, you know, this was about Yoko before he met Yoko. You know, he was dreaming of that girl. So I just love it. And I love the sort of Zorba the Greek kind of guitar licks towards the end of it. I just think it's a brilliant song, one of my favorites.
Yeah,
really great. I mean, the more I listen to this album, the more I'm like, geez, this is right up there within my life. Girl in My Life, wonderful.
Yeah, it's one that you don't, that also doesn't really get the play that it should.
Yeah,
and that's unfortunate, but it fits really well on this album and as a great Lennon tune. The next one we're not going to play, but we've already talked about it a lot, and we actually heard it already, was In My Life. And what else needs to be said, really? It's not a complete Lennon song, although he sort of... They had a little bit of tussling back and forth about it, John and Paul. I think they kind of disputed authorship. According to William Dowding in Beatles Songs, Lennon claimed he wrote the song with some help from McCartney. Paul said he wrote the music for the song. So that's pretty significant changes here. And so in an interview, McCartney said, "I think I wrote the tune to that. That's one we slightly dispute. John either forgot or didn't think I wrote the tune. I remember he had the words like a poem. I remember going off for half an hour and sitting with a mellotron he had writing the tune." And then Lennon later said, "Paul helped me write the middle eight melody." So, I don't know who wrote it, who cares, in a sense, because it's definitely a John song, and the lyrics are John's. So, it's a huge, you know, classic, great song.
All ages of people will connect to it, you know, because it's really about memories and things of that nature, you know. Just amazing song. One musical element that I really love about it, and I love how it happened, is George Martin on a break is like, I basically knew what needed to go in a section and recorded piano and then double speeded it, and it has that brilliant solo.
I believe that George Martin solo made it into our Best Beatles Solo episode a long time ago, and I think we really liked how it gives it a Baroque flavor, sort of sounds like Bach into the middle of the song here, which makes sense. Bach was older music from early 1700s, and looking back, and this whole song is very nostalgic. And I don't know about you, but the older I get, the more it really seems to make much more of an impact on me
Yeah.
The final Lennon track on Rubber Soul also has the word life in it, but it's a very different kind of song, and it's called Run for Your Life.
Okay, Run for Your Life, Dave. You want to start on this one?
Oh, sure. Well, this is a famous one in Beatles lore because it's often on the list of worst songs or at least throwaway filler type songs. And a lot of that John said himself that they just needed another song and he had to write something. And so in a way, it's unlike the other ones we've just listened to that have much more of a personal, introspective nature. This seems really just kind of like I got to crank out another tune here. It's okay. It doesn't really, I'm sort of neither here nor there about it. I know George Harrison found it to be a favorite, maybe because of the fun guitar parts, and it's kind of a bluesy, fun song to play, but.
It's glib.
Yeah.
It's years later, and knowing what we know about John Lennon and women and some of the incidents he had in his younger days, seems it's a little rough to swallow.
Yeah.
The lyrics of it and what the subject matter is. And then secondarily, the lyric is sort of a ripoff, you know, of a Elvis song too. So it's not great. And the fact that this closes the album just really kind of injures the album a little bit in my mind. It's sort of like, this is definitely the 12th man on the roster. You know, this is the Dickie Simpkins of the 90s Bulls. It like, he gets in the game and you're like, what are you doing? Take him out. Take him out. Sit him on the bench. To me, I don't like it very much. Some of the guitar stuff's okay, you know, but it had this been on their third album or something, we'd be like, oh, okay, this is fine.
Mm-hmm.
But here it just seems like with the sophistication of the rest of it, of the album, the next song we'll talk about is a little bit more musically interesting to me than this. This just sort of, it's sort of a bummer that the album ends on Run for Your Life now.
That's going to be maybe a question we could come back to is, if not that, what would you end the album with? In a way, it works because it's up-tempo, and there aren't a lot of really good up-tempo tunes on this album. So I don't know. That may be a question we want to
I don't have the answer. I just have the problem. The problem.
Yeah, exactly.
Just like all politicians.
Yeah, exactly.
But that song... of the six John songs on this album, four or five in your estimation of them being like really, really excellent of six. That's pretty good.
That's pretty good. Yeah.
I'm not. And once again, it's like Dickie Simpkins didn't play very much, but they still won a championship because the solid Girl in My Life, Norwegian Wood, and Nowhere Man. That's like a, man, that's quite a lineup.
Yeah, it is. You know? Yeah.
So,
very good contributions from John. And we're going to move now to the one contribution. Well, John was the main writer of it, but it also had some help from Paul and the only track on the song, on the album, sung by Ringo. And that's, I know, one of your favorite. We did discuss this also at one point, not very favorably, if I remember correctly. But that well, let's listen to it again and kind of hear it. So this is What Goes On.
Mm-hmm. when you treat me so unkind. What goes on in your mind? The other day I saw you as I walked along the road, but when I saw him with you, I couldn't feel my future fold. It's so easy for a girl like you to lie. Tell me why. What goes on in your heart? What goes on in your mind?
So tell me about what goes on here. Well, what goes on, Chris?
Well, this was a John song that he presented as maybe a follow-up to Please Please Me as a hit song, and so he presented it to George Martin, and George Martin's like, no, that song's terrible. So they didn't record it then. So it sat on the shelf for a long time, and then it's like, oh geez, we gotta have a Ringo thing on this, I guess. So they dug it up and then punched it up a little bit, and Ringo actually added some lyrics to it and helped a little bit. Isn't Ringo flat the whole song?
The whole song is really out of tune. Yeah, the singing, the guitar, just kind of off. Which, I guess it was recorded very quickly, probably. And Ringo's a little bit flat in the harmonies.
Yeah, so. the harmony vocals, if you isolate them, are very excellent. But because it's mixed with Ringo's sort of flat vocals into lead, it sort of creates this dissonance that goes through the whole song and just kind of bothers me.
Mm-hmm.
The guitar in this, though, is very good.
Yeah. Oh, they play well. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I do like the guitar in it when I can get some enjoyment out of it that way.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really always never been a favorite of mine of the Ringo songs. It's one of my least favorite. So that's where I land on.
Yeah.
And it was a rejected song. If John's singing this, do we consider it to be a great song? No.
No.
So far that's two duds on my list. So if it's two duds, can it be the greatest album ever?
We're gonna redeem your
People are gonna be so mad at me this episode. I fans, I appreciate all of your when we did a recent episode on Paul's album Tug of War. If you have not heard that, please go listen to it. And we talked extremely favorably about it. I thought.
Mm-hmm.
And then on our Facebook page, it's like, come on, guys, you what are you talking about? Yeah. This song's better than that. I'm like, no, there's a couple songs on there that's not that great. But you know what? I love it. I appreciate all of your we can all agree to disagree.
Oh, yeah. That's part of the fun. Absolutely. Yeah,
so I appreciate. Please keep them coming.
Yeah.
Call us idiots. Tell us how we're wrong. Express your opinion on that Facebook page or on Twitter or something. We love it. So, but what goes on is a dud.
Well, I'm wondering if you think the next one, as we move on to the McCartney contributions here, if you think that the next one is a dud, which is the first song on the album, actually, and a song that he plays a lot, has played many, many times in concert, and that's Drive My Car. So, Drive My Car. This one is a big McCartney favorite still to this day. And I like it. I think it's a great opener for the album because it's energetic. It has a bit of a... You mentioned that Girl was kind of sexy. This song also has some sexy lyrics to it. It's a little bit sassy, maybe. It has some sass to it.
Beep, and, beep.
Yeah.
Beep. Yeah.
Right, right. Yeah, about the metaphor of the car being involved here. The story about Paul and John working together on the lyrics for this song is really excellent, too. It says McCartney originally wrote the song with the lyric, "You can give me golden rings." And then Lennon said that line was, quote, crap. And, and then they both came up with, "You can drive my car," instead of, "You can give me golden rings." So I think we have to go with John on that one.
Yeah,
for that. But I always liked this song, and it's fun to play on the guitar. It's got a really cool introduction to metrically, and to try to figure out what's happening musically. It's hard to come in and to play it right. It's not the easiest song to play, and good guitar solo, and I dig it. How about you?
The bass is complicated and good. Musically, it's great. I mean, these types of songs. Drive My Car, Taxman, a few others like that, that are super clever, but not very deep. It's more of a joke song, really, in a way. They're not my favorite. If I'm writing a list of like what I want Paul McCartney to play me when I go to the Paul McCartney concert, Drive My Car is never going to be on that list for me. So considering a few weeks ago we talked about that L.A. trip.
Yeah.
Of theirs.
Right.
I wonder if this song was sort of influenced by that, by the types of women that they might have ran into out in L.A. Because it comes off as sort of an L.A. type song. It's like the Beatles' most Los Angeles song, Beatles catalog. So, but, you know, it's obviously tight, very good, very well recorded, very, you know, all instruments are playing good stuff. It's never going to be in my top 100.
Yeah. Well, fair enough. Fair enough.
But yeah. I can't say it's a bad song. It would be just be stupid to say.
The next song then on the album of Paul, is this more of a Paul favorite, or is this, do you find that You Won't See Me is kind of a underrated song, or, you know, this was recorded during the last session on the album here?
Well, let's play a little bit.
Yeah, you want to hear a little bit of You Won't See Me?
Let's hear a little bit of this and then we'll talk about it. Okay, You Won't See Me.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
I've always been of two minds about this song.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I like it. I like playing it. I think we've played it. Or maybe I played it. I recorded it at some point back when we were kind of hanging out and playing some stuff. I'm not sure if we did it together, but I think maybe I did it on my own. Mm-hmm. I was like, I really like this song. I really like the lyrics of this song. But there are a few things that bother me. One is they put it in the running order right next to Nowhere Man.
Yeah.
And they're very similarly themed. And I think that kind of hurts this You Won't See Me. Doesn't hurt Nowhere Man. They're using sort of the same metaphor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, using C in sort of a double meaning kind of thing. It drags at the end. They slow down. There's a gradual slowing of tempo during the song. It starts at 119 BPM and ends at 113 BPM. Was Ringo getting tired? ?
And for those who don't know what BPM means, that's beats per minute. So it slows down.
Yeah, and it's always stood out to me. Yeah. I thought it was crazy for a long time until it was I was like, am I hearing it wrong?
Yeah.
But no, I am hearing it right. It's slow. It drags.
Yeah.
So this is the one instance where I think the rapid recording of this, had they been able to like really listen, they'd be like, oh, we got to re-record this one.
Yeah.
Because it slows down.
Because that was the last, yeah, it was recorded during the last session for the album. So they probably knew that was it. They had no more studio time or had to finish it up. So I was like, well, all right, that's how it goes.
All that said, I really liked the interplay of vocals on this musically. I just think it, particularly the time after time, you refuse to even listen kind of section.
Mm-hmm.
And the, oh, no, I wouldn't, no, and all that kind of stuff. It just really is great.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm torn on it.
Well, you point out a good connection between this and the next song because those background vocals are really similar with the ooh, la, 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 ooh,
yeah,
which we hear a little bit later in Nowhere Man, pretty much the same thing. So there is that connection and has sort of a similar feel to it. I like the lots of tambourine on this album. It's really pretty prominently played here. John, I guess, is playing the tambourine on this one. And the piano, I give it props because it's a piano track, too.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that we're starting to see more of on this album. Fewer of the electric guitar songs and more of the acoustic and piano-driven songs. So I like it for that reason. The middle eight is really great with the time after time you refuse to even listen. I like that part that you mentioned as well a little bit. So I'm not a huge fan or I don't dislike it. It's just is sort of there for me.
So you won't see me. It's
you
good.
Won't see me.
Yeah. It's all right.
It works. Yeah. Now the next song is one of Paul's really famous songs here, and it's Michelle.
So Michelle,
yes.
What's your take on Michelle?
I used to be really mixed on this one too. For a while I didn't like it. I thought it was kind of boring. I liked it when I first heard it because I took French as a junior high student and into high school. So I thought that was pretty exciting to have a pop song that uses French, and Paul's French accent leaves a little to be desired, but he he tries. It's cute. It's very sophisticated musically. There's a lot going on. It's the chord progression is tricky, has diminished chords in it, like interesting harmonies, and the guitar sounds very sedated, very subdued. You know, another acoustic song except for the electric guitar solo in there. So just I like that sophistication. It's coolness. Like French, I mean, French culture has a very cool atmosphere about it. And I think it does evoke that atmosphere well.
John encouraged Paul to write it because Paul used to do this trick at parties where there'd be a girl around or something and he'd pick up the guitar and he'd sing a bit of a song and then he'd sing sort of fake French. And those girls didn't know any better. And they're like, ooh, he knows French. Oh, yeah. He's so sophisticated. So I like that element of it, of like a sort of, sophisticated romancing happening. So it's always worked for me because of that. And in the listening to it over the last few weeks, what really has stood out is this, the tone of the guitar solo.
Yeah, yeah.
Just so brilliantly, like, perfect tone mm-hmm. for the solo there.
Yeah, and this was noticed by many people. In fact, the recently deceased Alan Toussaint, who just died a few days ago here as of our recording, had a quote about this. "For melody and lyrics, the Beatles were unsurpassed, and I always loved Paul McCartney's bass lines. Songs like Michelle, Norwegian Wood, and Yesterday are so indisputably excellent." And yeah. that bass line really does stand out, along with the guitar. Very contrapuntal and interesting there. So I'm back around. I've swung around to the liking it again.
That's good.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
Who knows 3 years from now?
Yeah, 3 years from now,
When we dissect it 3 years from now, you'll be like, this is garbage. I'm going to get rid of this.
Episode 163, I may not like it anymore, so who knows?
Michelle. So thumbs up from me for Michelle. Yeah. very controversial thumbs up.
Yes, there you go. There you go.
A famous good Beatles song.
Yeah.
Next on our list is I'm Looking Through You. We're going to not play that right now, but let's talk about it. How do you feel about I'm Looking Through You?
So this is kind of a counterpart to Norwegian Wood. This is Paul's version a little bit, though he's not having an affair. But he was separated from his girlfriend Jane Asher at the time. And so it's a bit of a I'm looking through you, where did you go? I thought I knew you, what did I know? Kind of a figuring out where is our relationship? Where do things stand? What's going on?
Yeah.
And it shows more of a depth from Paul writing in a conversational way, but like almost a dialogue talking to Jane or a girlfriend or something. So to me, I like it. It's catchy, and the Ringo's wonderful Hammond organ work on this song really makes it too, here with the bomp 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 is excellent. So I like the vocals, and Paul sounds really good on it. So this is a thumbs up for me.
It always kind of just slipped past me a little bit until Anthology, when we got kind of a different version of it, and it made me sort of rethink about the song. And since then, I've liked it a lot. I've been like, oh, this is one of the slightly underrated tune. Just a great, great, great lyric in Love Has a Nasty Habit of Disappearing.
Oh, yeah.
Just a wonderful lyric.
Classic, yeah.
So really, really well done. Good song. Good energy to it. Maybe this is the answer to what the album should have ended on.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Could be. It definitely is one of the more up-tempo tunes, yet also still very acoustically driven here. So that seems to be a big theme here. The final Paul, it's sort of a half and halfer, but Paul does sing on it here, is the song Wait, which actually was not really recorded for this album originally. It was supposed to be on Help.
Yeah.
And so why don't we check out a little of Wait.
It's been a long time, now I'm coming back home. I've been away now, oh how I've been alone. If your heart breaks, don't wait, turn me away. And if your heart's strong, hold on, I won't delay. Wait till I come back to your side. We'll forget the tears we cried.
I feel as though you ought to know that I've been good as I can be. And if you do,
so we're calling it a Paul song because of what you just heard, how he gets the lines by himself there. So
yeah.
So
it seems more like a John song otherwise, because he's sort of his, I mean, they're doing joint lead vocals there, but John really pops there, and Paul's a little buried in the mix.
Yeah.
So, but I like the song. Mm-hmm. I've always liked the song, and I think, like, sometimes it's a little bit dismissed because it's like, well, it's on Rubber Soul, but it should have been on Help, and,
yeah,
you know, and it really kind of doesn't really fit in with the rest of the feel of the sophistication. I mean, it's sort of Help sophisticated lyrics, not Rubber Soul level sophisticated lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
But I like the tune. It's a good song. It's well done and well recorded, and, you know.
Yeah, I like the how they say the lyrics. It's been a long time, ching ching. Oh, I'm ching ching going back home. It's got a good interplay between the vocals and the instruments, and a lot of tambourine on this one as well. It really stands out here.
Yeah,
but this it works well. It was overdubbed, and this was actually recorded back in June of '65, as we mentioned, for Help. So I was kind of needed another tune, and it was pretty well finished. So I think it does. It still, even though it wasn't recorded for the album, I think the sound of it still, it's not a very heavy electric song, so it does fit pretty well on this album. So
yeah.
So what's your assessment of the Paul songs here? We've got Drive My Car, You Won't See Me, Michelle, I'm Looking Through You, and then Most of Weight.
A little bit weaker, you know, obviously weaker than the John contributions. And if Weight is half a John contribution anyway, then it's sort of like, well, John really is, this is a John album more than Paul album. Paul's contributions are a little bit fill in the gaps on this, but it's fine. It's fine. I would suspect that people who say Rubber Soul's their favorite album are, if I ask them, are you more of a John or a Paul guy, they're going to say, oh, definitely John.
Mm-hmm.
Don't like Paul very much. So
yeah, that would be a good question. If you're one or the other here, if you're a huge John fan, let us know if this really sticks out to you.
Yeah.
That's true. But
it's just speculation on my part.
Yeah,
but,
no, it makes sense.
Yeah, it sort of makes sense. And, you know, so, I mean, obviously Paul's going to have other great albums.
Yeah, they're coming.
So, where he's, you know, he's contributing mightily. So,
yeah.
And like we said, the big Paul jump up on this album to me is his bass playing is just front and center on a lot of these tunes, and you know Shell there obviously, and you know some of the other ones. So good contributions from Paul.
Yeah absolutely. So the last person we haven't talked about is George, and per usual on Beatles albums, he has one song per side, and so there are two pretty well-known songs, I'd say. The first one is interesting for a lot of reasons, so why don't we check out Think for Yourself?
All right, Think for Yourself, Dave. What do you think for yourself about this song?
I'm hearing a lot of tambourine again here, really sticking out, that tambourine, some maracas, and certainly the most notable thing is that bass, fuzz bass, that's just propulsing through this whole song.
Yeah, I've got a quote here from George Harrison from the anthology about that. Paul used a fuzz box on the bass on Think for Yourself, When Phil Spector was making Zippity Doodah, the engineer who set up the track overloaded the microphone on a guitar player and it became very distorted. Phil Spector said, "Leave it like that, it's great." Some years later, everyone started to try to copy that sound, and so they invented the fuzz box. We had one and tried the bass through it, and it sounded really good.
Hmm.
So, yeah, and I think it does sound good.
I agree.
It really gives the song a lot of character.
Yeah.
That otherwise it sort of, you know, without that, if you're just concentrating on the lyrics and the vocal performances, it's a little bit of a weak one.
Pretty gloomy subject or pretty gloomy lyrics for the most part.
Yeah. This is probably, once again, I'm going to the Beatles lyrics here.
Well, if I could preface that, I'll set it up first.
Yeah.
I'll say that when asked about this in George's autobiography, I, Me, Mine, he said, "Think for Yourself must be about somebody from the sound of it, but all this time later, I don't quite recall who inspired that tune. Probably the government." Now, you've got a different opinion here.
So this is, once again, this is Hunter Davies, and he says, in response to that, "Nice one, George, but you don't fool us." Perhaps he fooled himself, harboring a subconscious fear that he was not admitting at the time or even aware of. Novelists often do that, create situations on paper out of their imagination, which then come true. And what he's referring to there is that he says, "It's impossible not to believe it was written about Patty with her threatening to leave," which we knew did eventually happen. Yes, and hindsight can make us awfully clever, and we can easily get it wrong. So he's sort of, maybe it's about Patty, maybe not.
Hmm.
But, you know, despite what George says, it probably is somewhere in his subconscious mind, at least, about, like, "Hey, I don't know if things are working out here with this."
Could be, yeah.
You know?
I think George is just generally kind of gloomy. His lyrics are generally sort of gloomy, "Don't bother me," and there's always a little bit of doubt in every Harrison song, including the next one on the album, too, has a little bit of hesitation, too. So who knows? It's always interesting to speculate on where these songs come from. But as it sounds like you as well, the bass and the musical aspects really make it stand out and more interesting.
Yeah, I think George is maybe just an album behind or two lyrics wise. Obviously he hadn't had the practice in the songwriting, but there are some pretty good lines in this song.
Oh, yeah.
Particularly "the ruins of the life that you have in mind." That's pretty good.
That's
lyric.
A good line. Yeah.
So, you know, there's some good stuff in it, and it's, I've always been sort of like happy to hear it when it pops up, but not like seeking it out.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, the other song on side two of Rubber Soul is a very famous George Harrison song that he performed in concert and played, and it's "If I Needed Someone." I should also add, this song was played live by the Beatles, too. They played it in the late 65, 66, too. And so it was clearly a little more interesting for George to sing than "Roll Over Beethoven."
Yeah. I think they played it in the anthology as sort of a real haggard version of it. Like a real rough version of it to sort of illustrate how they were kind of like tired of touring.
Yeah.
Not doing very well. But that notwithstanding, the key thing that stands out to me on this track, especially after we talked about it, him having got this guitar on that trip, is that 12-string guitar. It's just really it really makes the tune to me. It really makes it like jump up a level for me. So what do you think?
Yeah, that the 12-string Rickenbacker that is very influenced by the Byrds. And if you think about what was going on at the time, 1965, which there's a book that says 1965 is the most important year in rock history. Mm-hmm. And that was, you know, putting together Mr. Tambourine Man with the Byrds, electrifying Bob Dylan, and yeah. using that 12-string guitar that the Beatles then used. Well, I mean, they used it earlier, but it really stands out on this track. And I think that it's just a really great guitar song, and the lyrics are to me, that hesitation. You know, the whole song is, you know, you're the one I'm thinking of if I needed someone.
Yeah.
So he's not really sure. Had you come some other day, you know, maybe it might not have been like this, but you see now I'm too much in love if I need it. I don't know.
Yeah. There's always I do really like that. It's like about like I'm not quite sold.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I mean, how many times in our lives have we been like that about somebody? Like, yep. You know, like, maybe.
Maybe the one. Yeah. So that seems very fitting with George's type of personality and outlook. So.
And it's pretty complicated of vocal harmonies in this thing too, and at times I've wondered like, I think until I heard the mono, the new album mono master, they didn't stand out to me as well as they have, but the backup vocals, particularly towards the end of it. It's just like, you know, but just really great. Just well done. Yeah. So
and clearly leaps and bounds ahead on this album for George. Not only his playing sounds great through the whole album, but his songs are a step forward.
Yeah. And I think the rest of the Beatles stopped phoning it in during George songs.
Yeah.
And really, we're like, oh yeah, let's really contribute to these, mm-hmm. you know? And of course, as we go forward, that would get better and better up to, you know, something. And,
While My Guitar Gently Weeps and all that. Yeah.
Well, and then of course, George says this is his favorite album, Rubber Soul.
Yeah.
And part of that has to be these two songs, but the other part of it has to be he played the sitar.
Yep.
You know, and he played the sitar on Girl,
mm-hmm.
where it sounds like the mandolin is being played that thing. So I really think he has, you know, I mean, he's all over this album with great, great, great work. So this is a big, big, big step up for George.
And that's kind of a good way to sum up the album and sum up the episode today is this. It's a really a group effort. So you've got, instead of just song, 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 each Beatle is really contributing something to each song that is distinctive, whether it's the background vocals are distinctive or the extra instruments like the sitar or the lyrical quality and fixing things like John fixing Paul's lyrics. And, you know, they're reaching that point that will get to Revolver of just being a, the group synergy is really happening here.
Yeah. And they're just coming into the studio, just ready to go. Really excellent.
Yeah.
They're not dilly dallying around. They know what they're in control. They know what they're doing,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that would just get obviously leaps and bounds forward album after album after this.
Yeah.
Just the experimentation in the studio and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Not so much experimentation in the studio on this one, just excellently well done, well recorded songs.
Mm-hmm.
I think the reasons I was saying it sort of slips back to not being like on my Beatles top albums list, it's fourth, mm-hmm. Is because A, the closer is not as good as the closer on Revolver. It's
well,
not
that's hard, yeah.
The closer on Abbey Road. It's not as good as the closer on Sgt. Pepper.
Well, that's going to be hard. So wow.
That's hard.
Taller.
And then these George songs, they're good, but would you take these two or would you take something in, Here Comes the Sun? So, you know, there's that too a little bit. And then, you know, it does have What Goes On it, which is kind of a not so great song. But all that said, it's like I said, it's, you know, a championship top level, top 10 all time album. Mm-hmm. I would have four Beatles albums in my top 10 all time albums.
Yeah, that's a pretty good ratio.
Yeah. So, you know,
yeah, it depends how you look at it. If you're comparing it to later albums, then it's going to be, yeah, obviously things develop and you know, comparing something with Think for Yourself is a no-brainer. But if you're looking at it in terms of the Beatles chronology and where they were at the time and how far they'd come in just a year or two,
yeah,
it really I can see why people might say it was in their, you know, top five or top three of all time.
Yeah. Well, and there's a thing. I mean, there are certain albums that you cannot deny the influence factor. And this is definitely one of them. It's like the influence and impact that this album had, or that Highway 61 Revisited had, or a couple albums like that. You know, whether or not track by track that's your favorite album, the impact it had on the world is undeniable.
Mm-hmm.
So I will give it that.
Yeah. Any case, it's a happy birthday to Rubber Soul, and of course some Plastic Soul, which is where the title came from, which was a term used to describe white singers singing soul music like Mick Jagger, and that's where that sort of came from. And Paul liked that term, so they changed it to Rubber Soul.
Let's talk just before we go here, too, about the album cover.
Yeah. So this was done by Robert Freeman, and it's one of the first albums that doesn't have the name of the group on it. So you just have Rubber Soul, and then the Beatles looking a little bit large or kind of, you know, stretched a bit because of they were on a cardboard. They wanted like sort of projected onto cardboard, and the piece of cardboard fell or slipped a little bit, so they were elongated and stretched, and the Beatles said, oh, we like that, we want that, let's get that. And so that's how Robert Freeman made the photo. And so they're wearing leather jackets and looking very full of big heads of hair on that album.
Yeah, I think that stretch thing, you know, really fits in too with that this is a new, we're stretching what we do to a new territory.
Mm-hmm.
So I really like the album cover. I think it's one of their best album covers,
mm-hmm,
for sure. It's really, really cool looking.
Yeah.
So
there you go. There's our summary here. Hopefully you're going to go pull that out after this episode and check it out yourself, and feel free to share your opinions. So
I'm going to get blasted for calling things duds. I know it.
Oh, well. Yes, get ready for it, Aircrest. So.
I can take it. I can take it, guys.
Well, in any case, our next episode most likely will be our holiday.
Oh, yeah.
Annual gift holiday episode. So look forward to lots of good recommendations and things for you to, as you said once, to put on your list and not get.
Yeah.
But there, we've got some good stuff to share with you this year, and we'll get into that in our next episode, most likely.
All right. Well, let's go out with that anthology version that's really fun to listen to of I'm Looking Through You, and we'll talk to you next time.
I'm looking through you, where did you go? I thought I knew you, what did I know?
blue.